The next matter we're going to take up is the Swartwick Davis versus Stafford DSS. Ms. Kadar? And am I saying that right? Is it Kadar?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, any time you are ready, you may come on up to the podium, please. Just to make sure, is everybody signed in? Okay. All of the attorneys? Okay, if you don't mind.
Thank you very much.
Yes, please go ahead. I'm going to allow them to. You're signing in before you have to begin. How much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
3 minutes, please.
Okay. You may begin whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Kristen Kadar, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Ms. Sarah Swartwood Davis. I have two issues, essentially, under the statute under which Ms. Swartwood's rights were terminated to her eldest child, Josiah. First, under the first analysis, the best interest analysis, we contend that the department did not meet its burden in demonstrating that Josiah's best interests would be met by parental termination. Here we have a child who is older than the other three children, is actually, by the department's own evidence, better served in a home by himself, was 7 at the time of the removal, and I believe was 9 at the time of trial, and didn't adjust well to foster care at all. He was,
that's not quite correct. The first foster care he didn't adjust well to. The second foster care with the 17-year-old, there was a better adjustment. Would that be fair to say?
There was a better adjustment, and that was in part due to the fact that he was, at that point, an only child in the home. Whereas in the first foster care home, he had both his own sibling or his half-sibling and the foster parents' children as well with him.
Doesn't the record also reflect that with a third foster care home, he was also seemingly doing well there as well? So it was really just the first foster care home that presented issues where there wasn't a great adjustment.
Well, I still contend that overall he did not bond well with his foster care parents, and I believe the foster care worker, Mr. Johnson, at some point said that he did seem to be having trouble establishing a connection to anyone outside of really his own family, and that he looked forward to seeing his mother, and that it was difficult for him to bond emotionally with others, such as his foster care parents. Although the record certainly indicated that he did better over a period of time, particularly with the services that were provided to him. However, the record doesn't indicate that, you know, that he couldn't have also done well in, you know, Ms. Swartwood's care as an only child, or that these services were necessary as a result of something that happened in her care as opposed to the removal itself or his placement in foster care. Similarly, the trial court concluded that because he was offered these services and there was no evidence that Mom would have offered these services, that he was better off in the care of the department, and that's just simply not the legal standard that the department needed to meet here. The question is not whether there is some situation that might just better serve this child at all, but whether Mom can't be, you know, the mother that she should be for the best interest of this child. And that evidence was not present at all on the record. There was evidence that she had difficulty supervising all four, but not that she had difficulty with this child in particular. In fact,
there were situations where there was one time where Josiah's whereabouts were not known, and then there was another implication that there was conversation that perhaps she had with him that was maybe a little bit more sophisticated than she should with a child.
With the first incident, that was prior to the removal when she lived with all four children and was experiencing various crises, mental health-wise and physically. And
but those are things that the court could take into consideration in terms of that as well as the mental health issues, the instability, the fact that Josiah needed stability is what the record indicated, and that she had begun living with someone else. And the court's concern was about the stability of that home and introducing another father figure, because Mr. Davis had been the only father figure up to that time. Aren't those things that the court could consider in terms of whether this was in the best interest of the child?
I think the court can consider evidence like the new relationship, but I don't think that there was anything conclusive in the record to show that it was negative in any way. In fact, the department had a pretty good rapport with Mr. Myers, who was the new boyfriend, and he had been very cooperative and had actually made efforts to integrate himself into the visitation. The department did not think that that was appropriate, but he provided a background check. They had been living together for some time by the time the circuit court trial came, and they had a stable residence at that time.
Are you talking about Mr. John Davis's residence?
Yes, ma'am.
Weren't there problems with that residence, though?
There were problems that were identified by Mr. Johnson when he came to do a home visit, but they rectified those.
Well, there were structural issues, holes in the walls, things of that nature, but when the social worker came back, there was indication that the house was still not clean. Well, that was his characterization. I'm just saying that's what they're saying, and so we're looking at this evidence in a certain light, and so I'm asking you to address sort of the characterizations that have been put forth.
Your Honor, my recollection of his testimony was that it perhaps wasn't, you know, up to his standards of how he would maintain a home, that there were several cats in the home, but that he had identified certain problems and that Ms. Swartwood had remedied those problems, that she had addressed the issue with the floor. They had actually replaced the flooring, that she had painted the entire house, that there was adequate space for all of the children, let alone one child, and that it was clean enough. Furthermore, as I argued at trial, there is the Fauquier County v. Ridgway case.
Well, let's talk about that case. Isn't that distinguishable from the facts here? Because in the Ridgway case, that was where there were two older children that were removed. And the two younger children, there was no indication that there was any effects of abuse or anything on the younger children. And we're in a different procedural posture here than Ridgway was, because Ridgway actually won that case. So the way that the court looks at the facts are slightly different than they would be here. Isn't that correct?
Well, in that case, all of the children were removed, but the rights were terminated for only two out of four.
Right.
And the court reasoned in analyzing the trial court's decision that mom was actually in a different position given that two of the children would no longer be in her care and custody, and that changed the analysis of the other two children.
What I'm saying is, isn't it a slightly different procedural posture that you find yourself in versus the Ridgway?
It is. It is. Well, because the standard of review is different.
And that's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Does that impact? Because essentially there are two cases that are potentially dispositive or supportive of your position. And so what I'm getting at is, if this is a different procedural posture, how does it impact your argument?
It is, Your Honor. I think this case is analogous to many of the facts in my case, and I am relying on it to sort of for the best interest analysis to show that this is also a consideration, that given that we did not even appeal the termination of the three younger children, it is different when you're looking at only the one child, because her inability to parent all four is not the same as her inability to parent one, or the same conditions that resulted in the removal cannot be analyzed in the same way when you're talking about one versus all of the four, including the twins who had special needs and, you know, so on and so forth, the younger children. So I do think the best interest analysis for Josiah in particular is a very different one than for the four in totality. But I do not think that case is dispositive. I do think that the Brooks case is dispositive for different reasons. And if it pleases the court, I could move on to the second prong of this analysis. The failure to remedy. There were certain conditions over a long period of time. The record indicates that there was a CPS case that was ongoing for some time, and the primary concerns were my client's mental health stability, lack of supervision or unsafe conditions in the home, medical neglect, particularly of the younger ones, and the concern that there was domestic violence present in the relationship with Mr. Davis. The foster care plan identified several goals, seven to be exact, and I think the record indicates that every single one of those was met, at least to the standard of substantial compliance. There was evidence that the domestic violence program was not complete, that my client had begun it, and that she had started her individual counseling later than perhaps the department would have desired. But aside from that, every single one of these boxes was checked off, so to speak, and the remaining complaints that the department had were simply not related to the reasons for the removal, such as that she still did not have an operator's license versus, you know, a learner's permit. That is not the reason why her children were removed, and it is not the basis for termination. When she's completed all of the requirements identified in the foster care plan, when the conditions have been substantially remedied, vis-a-vis the way they were in the summer of 2015, the department cannot simply say, well, you know, she's still very argumentative with us during meetings, and we don't really like her attitude, or she still doesn't have a license to drive or own a vehicle. These are unrelated, and it's analogous to the Brooks case, where the woman has a psychotic break, essentially, and goes and receives treatment, comes home, and the department still has some issues, like she can't operate a car seat, or there are concerns for her ability to care for the child. But those concerns are not directly related to the reason the child was removed to begin with. And it's the same here. I mean, we could think of all kinds of problems with anyone's parenting, essentially, but that doesn't create a foundation for termination under the statute. And I think that's what we have here with Ms. Swartwood. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Ms. Allard?
Yes, thank you, Your Honors. Your Honor, the department disagrees with appellant's basic premise that she substantially complied with the requirements that were set out in the first foster care plan. Looking at them, I can show you where we think she did not comply, why Mrs. Swartwood Davis did not comply. Will be expected to enroll in a parent education and demonstrate by her behavior the ability to discipline and provide appropriate parenting. She never did the second part of that requirement. And as evidence of that, her visits with Josiah on an individual basis, she would bring up court proceedings, talk about inappropriate things, and had to be talked to by the department about that. What she said to Josiah affected his behavior and upset him. Will be expected to have a psychological evaluation and follow the recommendations of the psychologist. She, in fact, had the psychological evaluation in March of 2016, but she never followed any of the recommendations of the psychologist, not one. Will be expected to enroll in a domestic violence program and provide documentation of completion to the family services worker. Well, she went to talk sessions at the what in Fredericksburg, the Domestic Violence Center is in Powerhouse. She went to open talk
sessions sometime beginning in 2016, and she signed up for the domestic violence program that was to begin in November of 2016. And this trial was in October of 2016. So she wasn't even beginning to complete that goal until after the circuit court hearing. She did keep some employment. It wasn't full-time, but we didn't think that was the big issue here. She did not comply with, will be expected to secure an appropriate home that would meet the needs of her four children and maintain the cleanliness for at least 3 months. By her own statement, her official move-in date to the home she offered as the home for these children was July 1st, 2016. The trial in juvenile court was in August. She could not have the 3 months of having a clean house. That was impossible under her move plan. The reason she didn't comply with the different goals set out in the plan is unclear. But when you look at this case, you have to look at the context of where was Mrs. Swartwood Davis when these children came into care. She had not lived with the children since April of 2015. She was hospitalized in a mental health hospital. Then she went to a woman's group home. Then she went to crisis intervention. And during that time, the children were with her mother and grandmother. These children had significant medical issues when they came into the care of the grandmother and the great-grandmother.
Counselor, respectfully, she's just focused on Josiah. So if you...
Right. Josiah had significant issues. He was one of the four that was there. The difference between this case and, I think, Ridgeway case, the differences are very clear, and I think Judge Sharp properly ruled on that and commented on that, that in that case, the mother was not mentally ill like this mother is. The Brooks...
You're not suggesting, though, that mental illness in and of itself is a determinative factor as to whether termination is appropriate.
Absolutely not, Your Honor, but I think comparing the two cases and saying they're analogous, you have to look at the facts of the two cases. And in that case, it was very different. We're talking about two children that were much younger and were not exposed so much to the abuse as the two older children. And the two older children had special needs. So the fact patterns are very different. That's all I'm saying. Not that that is the factor. As far as the Spotsylvania case, that case, the Brooks case, that was the guardian ad litem, Ms. Kelly's case. And that case is very different as well. In that case, the mother had a psychotic breakdown, and after that, she had no further hospitalizations. The father was back in the picture, so they were working as a team, mother and father, to get this one child back. There was substantial compliance with the plan and substantial improvement. In this case, mom had two mental health hospitalizations after the children stopped living with her. In the September 2015 timeframe, she had suicidal ideation and she was hospitalized. She seems to point, Mrs. Swartwood Davis seems to point to the fact that she became much better once she got on a stabilization drug in October of 2015. The record indicates that wasn't the case, that in fact she continued to have emotional breakdowns regularly in the department. She and Mr. Davis, while they were still together, would argue in front of the children, not necessarily directed at the children, but she was not in control of her behavior.
But there was a period of time where Mr. Davis was not a part of the home environment or the possibility of being reintroduced into the home environment.
Right. They married in July of 2015. Then the children were moved in July 15. March of 2016, he beat her up. was arrested and incarcerated. So after March of 2016, he was not in the picture. It was in April of 2016 that she moved in with a new boyfriend. The point that counsel made that you can't terminate because the department can provide more services than the parent is well taken. But here, I believe what the judge was talking about, that the mother would not provide the same services, is contained in the record where the protective services worker talked at length about services that were offered to Ms. Swartwood Davis from 2012 on, and that she refused to use a lot of the services. For instance, she would not use VICAP, go to VICAP to get services in place for her children. She wouldn't do that. That's what the court was saying, is that those services would not have been provided by mother, and there, because there's evidence she would not do it. As far as mother's compliance, another important factor is that although she was having the help of a parenting coach that the department provided for her from January through June of 2016, she still couldn't get those goals met. And here she has a professional who's driving her around, helping her make appointments, helping her do things. She still couldn't meet those goals. The court was probably correct when it said, you know, you look at the 5 years that the department's been involved, and mother has not been able to show stability and probably will not be able to in the future. We believe that's an important consideration. The best interests of the child are certainly met by keeping the child in a place where he is safe, where there's consistency, and where there's permanency. He hasn't lived with his mother since April of 2015. Trying to introduce another man as a father figure is another instance of inconsistency that this child doesn't need. Consistency was stressed by his counselor, Mr. Valentine, that this child in particular needed a lot of consistency. So with that in mind, Your Honor, it is our belief that the best interests of the child are being met in foster care, and that mother did not comply with the plan. There was not even substantial compliance. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Ms. Kerr?
From my perspective, Your Honors, the record simply doesn't support the idea that Ms. Swartwood Davis didn't substantially comply. With respect to the parenting class, I don't think there was any debate about that, but she completed that almost immediately. The psych eval was also completed timely, and although Ms. Sauer indicated that she didn't follow any one of the recommendations, that's simply not reflected in the record. Dr. Berry's recommendations were that she maintain her medication management, that she complete the mental health skills building 6-month service that was offered through Compass, and that she enroll in outpatient therapy and become involved in the community. Those were the 4 recommendations. Dr. Reese testified that she had maintained her medication management over the entire period and that it was successful. There was also evidence, I think, from Dr. Berry herself that Ms. Swartwood completed the mental health skills building component, which was a 6-month wraparound therapy service that was provided by the same agency, and Ms. Sauer just actually alluded to that, arguing that despite this service, Ms. Swartwood still couldn't do the other things that were required of her. In fact, the department indicated that she was to do the outpatient treatment part of it after she completed the 6-month skills building session, which she did, and then she started to do the outpatient therapy. And this was also through the Community Services Board, which one does not just instantaneously get an appointment at. She was already a patient for psychiatric care, but she needed to, you know, obtain regular counseling services, which she eventually did. It just wasn't instantaneous because this all cannot be done all at once. Similarly, the domestic violence program was initiated a bit later during this period, but one of the major issues here was that Ms. Swartwood was still with Mr. Davis, who was the abuser in this situation. The abusive relationship was one of the problems, and her extricating herself from that situation was a major accomplishment that took place about 7 months in. And after that, when she moved out and terminated this relationship permanently, she started to make very significant progress. The fact that she didn't immediately accomplish all of these goals is not how we evaluate the situation. The fact is that 12 months later, she had substantially complied. She was employed during this entire period. She had 3 different jobs, but she maintained her employment. The department itself, in one of the foster care plans, indicated that that objective had been met. She did have appropriate housing. She didn't have appropriate housing during the entire period, but she did at the time of trial. And the foster care worker made several visits, evaluated the situation, made recommendations, and she completed those. And that's the entire sum of the objectives, Your Honor. She did meet those goals. And again, these other concerns are unrelated. As far as the conditions leading to removal, she did remedy those conditions, and she met the goals outlined by the department, and I think the record clearly indicates that she substantially complied.
Thank you. We will come down and greet counsel.